Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion. This is my phenomenal co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. Now, it may look like we have a guest. Not really. We just wanted some eye candy because we're ugly. No, I'm kidding. We do have a guest. I'd like to introduce you to Chase Taylor. She lives here in Pahrump, and you are a tattoo artist, an artist generally, and you tattoo as well, and you also work in like a retail shop.
Yes, at a thrift store.
Do you airbrush?
I've done it a couple of times. I've done pretty much every medium a couple of times, but...
So, if I wanted to have you, say, customize my motorcycle helmet, are you ready for that or not yet?
Potentially. I would try that.
We'll talk offline.
Okay. I'll try that. There you go. All right. The reason we have Chase on is this. Chase and I are friends, and I noticed something on her Facebook page that I thought was interesting. And we should start by saying that Chase leans left politically, okay? If you were to draw a line down the center of the political spectrum, she would typically be thought by most people to be on the left side. However, to her credit, she's very independent-minded. She doesn't follow one particular mantra. But what caught my eye is that being somebody who tends to be left, she made a post that was critical, in a sense, of gun control. It questioned the wisdom of the people who promote gun control in the wake of something like the Orlando shooting. So tell the audience a little bit about what that post embodied, the point you were trying to make.
Well, basically, I've noticed when it comes to, I guess, what you would describe as the left side's view on gun control, it comes down to mainly like regulations regarding like high capacity magazines or assault weapons, when in actuality this is a very small portion of gun violence as a total. So it's a very like ineffective route if you're going to go for regulations on guns. It's ineffective to the whole, which tends to be that way with most of their ideas on the left, as opposed to on the right, which isn't do anything, which I don't think is necessarily
any better. Let me see if I can restate
any better, but
it sounds like they're trying, like they're going for a macro solution to a micro problem.
Yes.
Okay. Or another way to describe it, if I mischaracterize it, please let me know. You're saying that for those who think there's a problem with firearms in America, they're focusing on this little tiny segment of the problem, usually in the wake of some highly publicized event.
Exactly.
Rather than focusing on what some people consider to be the larger problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you don't see that that's particularly...
It's not effective in
not
the
effective.
Long run.
Okay. So, go ahead.
If I may, do you see a problem with the Second Amendment or gun rights in the United States? Do you see an issue with it, right, the way it stands now?
One argument that I will kind of give some credit to is the argument that it was written in a time where you couldn't go into any given building and mow down a crowd of people in a matter of seconds. But fact of the matter is that it doesn't tend to happen even now as a possibility of it happening. You know what I mean? It doesn't show in the trends and statistics as being a major problem as compared to something like police brutality or like police killings or even homicides or suicides. Suicides leads gun violence by a large margin.
And
incorrectly stated, in my opinion, as gun violence. It's not violent if it's a suicide. It's like if you put your car in the garage, start it, close the door, and asphyxiate yourself to death, is that, you know...
Nobody calls it violence.
Yeah, is that a horrible car incident? Or if someone hangs themselves, is that rope violence?
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It still calls for different regulatory options, though.
Such as?
When you say it, what is it?
Suicides, for instance. Because one of the regulations that I would maybe lean towards being as, a reasonable regulation is, since suicide rates is so high as comparison to, like, homicides or mass shootings, which is 1% of all gun violence, it might be effective in slowing down suicide rates if you actually had like a question like, what do you intend to do with this weapon as you're buying it, rather than just check, are you doing drugs, don't do...
But that might account for the people that are buying it for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But my question would be, how often does that happen? We've seen from the reports of Orlando, it would seem as though this guy went to buy guns for the purpose of this shooting, if we're believing the narrative that's being put out there.
And I seem to recall the last year that we have statistics for suicides, and you may have looked at it more recently than have I. I seem to recall the statistics for suicides with firearms was about 15,000 in a year. And yet there are, I may get this number wrong, like roughly 1 million firearms sold each year in the country. And so 15,000 used in suicides is obviously, it's statistically insignificant. Exactly. I'm not saying that anybody's death is insignificant. Statistically insignificant.
And my question... That also doesn't necessarily mean, Dave, I just want to clarify some things, that everybody who commits suicide this year went out and bought a gun from a dealer
this year. Right, absolutely. They may have had the gun 30 years.
It could have been grandpa's gun that got handed
sure.
down.
We lost somebody a couple weeks ago that used to be on the Nye County Sheriff's Department to suicide who owned that gun many, many years.
Yes.
But here's my question, and again, I'm not trying to make you wrong, okay? I just want to, when people say this might solve something, I say, okay, but what if?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we imagine that some guy's standing in a gun store and he's filling out his 4473, that's the form that you were talking about, the questions, and one of the questions on the form is, what do you intend to use this gun for? Okay. Humorously, I imagine all the check boxes, you know, to murder my ex-wife, suicide, you know. Do we imagine that the person who's there right then for the purpose of buying a gun, taking possession, taking it home and blowing his brains out is going to check the suicide box?
No.
I wonder about these things, you know.
Keep in mind that if you've never seen a Form 4473, there's a whole number of various questions that are on there. And in order for it to be complete, one of them is check no, or yes, all the rest are check no. It depends on, you know, where you are in there. And like the guy in Orlando, if we're believing this narrative, some of those boxes would have been checked opposite. They would have been checked yes when he actually checked no, which would have prevented him from buying the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, truth on a sheet of paper, I don't know, has actually ever stopped anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're planning to kill kill somebody else or kill yourself. The fact that you're committing perjury on the form might be irrelevant, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Now, you've spoken about reasonable regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a phrase that causes people on the left, people on the right, immediately when somebody says reasonable regulation, the people on the right go, okay.
Reasonable or common sense, whatever.
Yeah, common sense. Yeah. And I consider myself in that group I just discussed. I'm the one I hear the phrase and, you know, okay. And Bill had a question, I know, because we talked a little bit about you being on the show. By the way, Bill met her an hour before the show, so there's no history there. But Bill and I were talking about the possibility of you coming on the show, and Bill had a question about the definition. So why don't you...
And what's your definition of reasonable?
And
this goes to a larger question. Who is to define reasonable when it comes to something which is a constitutionally protected right?
Well...
And the reason we ask this question isn't to put you on the hot seat. It is...
Yes, it is.
No. The reason is, for instance, if we were talking about free speech, okay, we wouldn't allow a vote of the people or a vote of the people's elected officials to tell us what we can and cannot say. And the government has overreached in that regard before, where it has attempted to say this is impermissible speech. The elected officials have passed laws, and the courts have come along and said, sorry, First Amendment.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
they've...
These books you can burn, but these you can't.
Yeah, right. So, again, not trying to put you in the hot seat, but for those of us who feel, first of all, passionately about the right to keep bear arms, and passionately about unalienable rights in general, we have a concern about these phrases, common sense regulation, reasonable regulation. And Bill's question is quite apt. Who determines that?
Well, what about having, like, for instance, a reasonable regulation that I think is ultra reasonable is like background checks, because I know that it's not required in every state for to have that. But it's like 52% less mass shootings occur in states which require a background check.
Actually, background checks are federal. They happen in every state and every territory in this country.
Let me give you a little background on background checks. If a person buys a gun from a licensed gun dealer, you walk into a gun store. Every gun store is a licensed dealer. They have to be. Okay. So the person who walks into a gun store and says, I'd like to buy a gun today, and here's my money, and I want that gun.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They fill out that 4473 we talked about. And before the dealer can hand them the gun, they have to engage in a background check. Most states have what they call the Insta-check system now.
Text message.
I could have sworn I turned that damn thing off. Yes. Evil bastard. All right. So.
Where some states have a longer wait period.
Yeah, like California.
Okay. California is a few days, 5 days, 7 days, something like that.
Yeah.
Illinois is 24 hours. I think some counties are up to 72.
Here in Nevada, we have Insta-check.
Yeah,
it's a matter of minutes.
The federal government requires an instant background check. Some of the states or counties, depending on the state laws, can say that it needs to be longer.
Okay.
But actually, every state and where in the U.S. And some states even have mandatory background checks for private party transfers. Like if I'm going to buy a gun from Dave and we're in, I don't know,
California. Has it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We have to go through a dealer in order to do that for the background.
And that statistic was from Pew Research Center, so I'm not sure exactly what criteria they were using.
Now, not every transaction has to be backgrounded. So, for instance, here in Nevada, if I have a firearm that I no longer desire and Bill likes it, I can sell it to Bill privately here in Nevada, and there's no paperwork, no background, no nothing,
mm-hmm.
okay, because we have a high degree of freedom here in Nevada. And it doesn't matter the kind of weapon it is, as long as it's not Class 2 or 3. As long as it's a standard, ordinary weapon, we can transfer it without any of that.
As well, there are in certain areas, like in Nevada's one, if you have a concealed weapons permit, which shows you have a background check, like Dave has one,
mm-hmm.
if he shows that to the dealer, he's already cleared for the background because he's already got his existing concealed weapons permit.
Yeah.
But that's state by state.
Right. So, I was going to develop into a subsequent topic, but we're getting down to the end of this segment. So when we come back, I want to ask you about private party transfers. And we'll be back right after these words. Welcome back, my friends. This is our special guest, Chase Taylor, who we've been talking with a little bit about firearms and perspective of somebody who comes somewhat from the left, but feels that gun control, as practiced or preached, perhaps, by the left, is not necessarily effective. So at the end, I said I was going to talk to you about private party transfers, and that's the part that in most states does not require a background check. So, but you notice that virtually all of these mass shooters, the ones that are publicized like crazy by the media mm-hmm. for weeks on end, they always bought their gun in a gun store.
Yep.
So they've done the background check and cleared the background check.
I have a philosophy on that.
Oh, speak out.
I really, truly believe a lot of these things, based on William Casey, who was the CIA director under Ronald Reagan, who said in his first briefing to his upper management in 1981, "We'll know our disinformation campaign is complete when everything the American public believes is false." And going along that mantra.
It's a scary statement.
It is. And keeping in mind, that was 35 years ago.
Right.
So what have we done in more than a third of a century? I'm sure that we've gotten much closer to that. Now that we don't have a bunch of independent media, it's all based on the big five media organizations, such as that, and all the information.
Whatever the government gives them.
Yeah, and it all comes from State Department and such. What I am seeing is when we had actual authentic bona fide bad guy shooters that have gone out there and created havoc, these rogue wackos that are doing this, you find out that these guys weren't actually going out and buying their guns from dealers. Well, that doesn't help to net in gun control, to rein that in. So when you have these others that are coming in, which, honest to God, a lot of it might be contrived. We have a tremendous amount of information that Sandy Hook wasn't authentic, that there's a number of other shootings that weren't truly authentic in the narrative that we were delivered and we're supposed to buy
mm-hmm.
based on historical evidence couldn't possibly be the actual story.
Right.
So I'm looking at it as if this happens to be one of those cases that they showed, okay, this guy went out, he did the background check, he did this, that, and the other, and then he still went out and committed all this mass murder. So that tells us we need to restrict it even more. And I believe this is very well contrived and well planned out if, in fact, that's what's going on. Because I don't trust the government at all.
No, nor do I. I don't think you do either.
No, I'd have to agree with you there.
Which is very odd for somebody on the left, which is why I said you're an independent thinker.
Which is why I do hold the opinion on it that I do, is because I do realize that, you know, taking weapons from any country is usually representative of a dictatorship or totalitarian government. It's not usually...
So you're not going by the foon-sped mantra, which I appreciate.
Oh, no.
No. Independent thinker.
It's actually, I think it's something like 31% of gun violence has gone down by 31% since 1993. And then if you ask the public, I think it's about 56% of Americans think that it's gone up instead of decreased.
Because we're hearing more about it. And the interesting thing is
Let me interrupt one thing.
Sure.
By the way, I think the number you're giving is in the last decade. From 1993, it's down 75%.
Really?
Yeah. That 30% figure is, I think, in the last decade.
Huh.
And the FBI classifies a mass shooting as any one shooter who shoots four people or more.
Including themselves.
Including themselves. However, what they don't include is gang violence. So if you include gang violence, just in the city of Chicago alone, we're talking about hundreds more shootings that have happened over those decades.
Yes. And the anti-gun groups include the gang violence in their numbers. They include suicides in their numbers.
Yes, well, then again, you also have, who is it, Violence Policy Research Institute, is that it?
Yeah. Lovely people.
They actually refer to children that are victims of gun violence.
Yeah.
But if you read their narrative, they define children as somebody 25 years or less.
Yeah. Which embraces all gang members.
Yeah, so they have 7 years of adults listed in there that they're calling children.
Yeah. Not even adults, not even young adults, children. You know, it gives you the visual picture of a 10 or 11-year-old.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this. There's different kinds of firearms.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
We have handguns, shotguns, rifles. Within the category of rifles, we have, you know, like your grandpa's bolt action. We have things that, sadly, people wrongfully refer to as assault rifles, because I despise that term. Assault rifles were originally created in World War II by the Germans. And an assault rifle, you pull the trigger back and it goes, brrr, that's an assault rifle, right? Things that go bang, 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 bang is a semi-automatic, in the case of what's called assault rifle, it's a semi-automatic box-fed weapon.
Yeah. And we're as opposed to a crew-fed,
right.
fully automatic. This is an individual fully automatic. And it's also the same definition through Department of Defense. That the Army actually created with, this is an assault weapon, and they defined it as fully automatic, non-crew-served individual capacity.
Yeah. And the very first one, the Germans, was the Schmeisser.
STG-42, I think.
Yeah.
And that's another point, too, is that I think only 11% of all gun violence accounts for high-capacity magazines or assault weapons. So it's like,
what do you consider high capacity, just curiously?
I'm going off of a statistic again with that 11%, so I don't know what their criteria involved, but I believe it was...
Well, the reason we asked, because high capacity did get thrown around a lot, I think you would agree. And, you know, I remember, I mean, I come from the world of the 1911, okay? This is actually an 8-round magazine, which is not originally standard.
Okay, but mine holds... 13 rounds, so is this high capacity?
When that came out, that's how it was pitched.
Yes.
Because this is standard capacity magazine is 7, okay? All of a sudden, whoa, we get up to, I think the Glock 17's original capacity was 16-1.
No, it was 17.
Was it 17?
17-round magazine, hence the name Glock 17.
So all of a sudden, these are called high capacity. And, of course, you take something like an AR.
Mm-hmm. And it looks scary.
Standard little magazine, which is about this size, okay, is a 20-round magazine, okay? And they are, for each of those weapons the magazine bill brought out, the magazine, are standard capacity magazines, as is the 20-round magazine or 20, even 30-round magazine for an AR is a standard capacity magazine. Now, who's the company that now makes the 100-rounders?
Oh.
Surefire.
Well, they're one of them, yes.
So,
but then you could even take Gabby Giffords. Gabby Giffords was shot in Arizona a few years ago, right? She was shot by somebody with an actual high-capacity, it was a 33-round magazine and a Glock 17. Hmm. Now, that gun's designed to hold a 17-round magazine. 33-rounders is standard for the Glock model 18, right. Which is actually a fully automatic pistol, which is not available to any private citizen in the U.S.
Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make is people use this phrase high-capacity, and it's really boils down to it's... First of all, usually they have no idea what the phrase means.
Okay.
But what it really comes down to when I hear people, anti-gunners use it, more bullets than I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
You have more bullets than I'm comfortable with.
Exactly.
And
like a revolver with like 8 rounds it'll fit in. That's a high-capacity revolver.
Right, you know.
Hey, Ruger developed it. I think someone else had a 7-round 357 Magnum. Hey, that's 6 plus 1.
Okay, so your point in showing the 11% figure is, if I read you correctly, that's not a huge part of what some people would call the problem.
And they call it common sense regulation when they say these things about high capacity things and stuff like that. But it's not common sense because it's not actually looking at any trend that is really prevalent in our society. They aren't looking at the main picture.
Right.
When they're picking at the edges because it looks scarier. And
didn't you and I do a YouTube video on that?
We did.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the thing you can actually take when you talk about things that look scary. You can actually take one of these wooden stock rifles that your grandfather might have fired, and you can pull the action and the barrel out. And you can put it in like a black polymer stock, and you can put all sorts of accessories on it, you know, cup holder and everything. And and suddenly, now it's a gun that scares people.
Yeah.
But it's the same gun that our grandfathers were firing 100 years ago.
You actually mentioned a couple minutes ago about a gun that looks scary. Well, you know what? Dave looks scary, but is he? I mean, if you didn't know Dave, would he kind of look
you're
scary?
Blowing my steel. I mean,
he's buffed out. He's got a bald head. He's got visible tats everywhere, including on his hands, right? So he kind of looks scary. But is he?
No.
So you can have a scary
gun. Talk later.
You know what's interesting is in California, I have talked to a few different attorneys that I know who live in California and talked to them about trying to fight some of the regulations against AR-15s that they have in California. Because they ban things because they look scary. So what they're doing is they're quite legitimately profiling an inanimate object.
Mm-hmm.
Now, human profiling, oh, no, you can't do that. That's against the law. But you can profile an inanimate object.
Right.
They actually have what is referred to as a featureless AR-15 in California. If the stock is fixed, non-collapsible, non-folding, it's just a fixed stock. There's no pistol grip or thumb hole. It's basically like a standard style stock.
Right.
No flash hider and no grenade launcher.
Because we all have grenade launchers.
Yeah.
That there could,
outside of California, we all have grenade launchers.
If all of those things are missing, then it's a featureless gun and you can actually have a removable full capacity magazine in there. Otherwise, if it has any two or more features on there, it needs to be registered and you can't take the magazine out. You have to have the bullet button. But if you change just a couple of, and the thing is, the reason I bring this up is the gun still operates exactly the same. It's how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Does it look differently?
Right.
And we have several Supreme Court rulings. You guys can actually search it on YouTube. It's called Save the Second. I put that up a couple years ago, and it goes through a whole bunch of Supreme Court rulings that are still standing today about protection of guns, not the least of which is one where they ruled on the definition of the militia and said that is private, able-bodied men who are to supply their own privately owned firearms that are suitable to military standard of the day. How can we do that if they take away AR-15s and the scary guns? How can they do that with the NFA in 1932?
Oh, yes. That's
how can they do that with GCA of 86? How can they do that with GPA of 86?
Now, let's go back to your concept that some of these events are actually contrived to keep tightening and tightening, tightening the vice against gun owners and gun ownership. Featureless rifle in California. Right? What happens when a featureless rifle is used in a mass shooting in California. It met the standard that it's not objectionable. It doesn't have to be registered.
There's legislation right now, competing legislation, between the Democrat lieutenant governor and the Democrat majority leader of the state Senate in California that to have a whole, about a half a dozen major anti-gun laws go through. And one of them includes no removable magazine
at all.
Guns at all. Imagine that.
Stripper clips.
Imagine. Stripper clips. Yeah, absolutely.
For people who know what they're doing, right? It's almost as quick.
Or an SKS.
We should do a video on that.
We could. We'll be right back right after these messages. We're back. We're talking about gun control from someone who tends to lean towards the more liberal agenda. However, it's become apparent that you're able to process things yourself without being spoon-fed. So specifically, we're talking obviously about gun control-related issues. And Dave, you mentioned just during the break a point that you wanted to come back to.
Yes. You mentioned that it seemed, if I'm to paraphrase you correctly, that the anti-gun crowd, they're off base in their legislation. They're looking at this. They want to do all of this, but maybe the problem is this, and all of this doesn't even address that.
Yes.
And I wanted to validate that with a very, very current event, which was, of course, yesterday. Four different gun bills all got shot down in
the Senate. 2 days ago for you guys.
Yeah, that's right. All got shot down. But the point I wanted to make was that the bills didn't even address the issues. For instance, the impetus for the bills being introduced, of course, is the shooting down in Florida at the Pulse nightclub by Omar Mateen. One of the bills, as an example, wanted to make sure that people who are on the no-fly list or watch list, they never seem to distinguish exactly which list.
They are two different lists.
They are two different lists. And they wanted to make people who are on this list could not get a gun. Now, leaving aside the due process issue, because that's a debate for another show, Omar Mateen was never on either list. The FBI had looked at him, or Homeland Security had looked at him a couple times and determined there was nothing cognizable under criminal statutes, because at that point he hadn't committed any crimes, and the investigations ended. He was never on the watch list. He was never on the no-fly list. Yet the legislation in the wake of the shooting is, got to get people who are on the no-fly list to not have guns. Well, wait a second. How would that have stopped Omar Mateen?
I think this is purposeful with what I said in the last segment, Dave.
I agree.
Is they're looking to pass legislation that wouldn't have prevented this jackass from shooting up the nightclub in Orlando. Because then when the next one happens, say, well, we need to go even further on it. So what they're doing is they're restricting things around that, and then they'll restrict around until their grip is so tight on every little thing. You know, you got to also understand, not a lot of people have heard this information, but it is out there. It's public information that before he bought the guns at the dealer he did buy them from, he was talking to another dealer about buying bulk ammo and bulletproof vests. Mm-hmm. And because of the conversation they were having back and forth, the dealer decided, I'm not going to sell to you, then called ATF, which got a hold of FBI, and said, hey, by the way, we're a little concerned about that. This is the guy that came in. This is what he's talking about. This. So the federal government had this information. If anybody...
Within the week, I believe.
Within the week. If anybody dropped the ball on stopping this guy, it was the government that had all of the information on him. All of the information. Now, some people say, well, what about his domestic violence convictions? He didn't have any.
No.
Or he wouldn't have been able to buy those guns.
Right. And his ex-wife, who made the allegation of domestic violence, and she seems fairly credible to me, but she didn't do that until after the event. Then she said her perception is he was mentally ill and that he was a closet homosexual, and that the reason she left him was because of domestic violence. But that all came out post the incident.
Why didn't you tell us that, like, yesterday? I mean, seriously, if somebody's got problems and you see them and they're working in the field of having a gun, the guy worked in the field of security, she feels this way. He's had his coworkers talk about this many times,
saying he was violent and hated everyone.
Been investigated by his employers. Been investigated twice by the FBI. then a dealer calls and says, hey, this guy's asking some crazy questions. We don't feel right about this. And the ball, you couldn't have more information that this guy is a loose wire. Yeah. So for him to be able to go do this, I truly believe someone said, leave it alone.
Yeah. It's like putting on some sort of like tight jacket. And I do something that's not right with my right hand, and they tighten up the left side. It's like, how is this helping the situation? It's
ridiculous.
Crazy.
And, you know, it's funny. I just want to sidebar a little bit. There was a reporter in Chicago, works for the Chicago Sun-Times, that is a vehement anti-gunner. I mean, this guy is major league anti-gun, written about it many times throughout his career. His editor assigns him because he says, it's easy for anybody to go anywhere in the country and buy a gun. So his editor told him, your assignment is to go buy an AR-15. So he went to go try to buy an AR-15, and there's a 24-hour wait. They called him up, and they said, we're not going to sell you an AR-15. He says, did I pass the background check? Well, you did, but we are not going to sell you the gun. Well, can I ask why? We're not at liberty to say. So as it turns out, they called his editor, and they said the reason we're not selling him a gun is because he has a history in the courts of drinking and domestic violence. And we are not going to sell a drunken wife beater a gun out of our store. We're not comfortable with that. So, of course, the guy tried to cover that up in the story, gave it the slightest little mention. But the truth is they just don't want reporters to get in there and find out.
Right.
Right. So he tried to spin it, but he didn't do well because he's a drunken wife beater, and that's why they're not selling him. Now, he hasn't been convicted of domestic violence or he wouldn't have passed. Right. But there's been many allegations, and the police and the courts are aware of it.
Right. And when we talk about sort of drunken wife beating, that sort of brings up perhaps we start leaning towards the direction of mental health issues that plays into some of the more notable mass shootings. The one that leaps to mind for me is Aurora.
All of them. Well, who's in their right mind that does a mass shooting?
Yes, but then you've got like the Aurora thing where the guy was just, you know, he wasn't even pretending to be playing with a full dagger.
Yeah, you take a look at this guy and he looks like a rejected version of the Joker's minion from Batman.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, I'm going to profile that guy. Your profile, buddy.
Yeah.
You know.
So you had a few things you wanted to talk about concerning moving in the mental health care direction of the conversation. So go ahead.
I guess the main reason why I'm not usually on board with the left side's idea of gun regulation is that I feel like it's kind of sweeping the real problem under the rug, which is different stressors in society that aren't being handled by our government, which is like, again, I'm on the left, so livable wage, which we don't have. And then it comes back to like high stakes testing and education. It creates an environment that's stressful for anybody. I think 70% of gun violence in general, 70% of mass shootings occur in a business or educational environment. So it's a place where they either work or they go to school at or some place in their community that they regularly go to. And it's brought on by just different stressors. I think our mental health as a whole in the society isn't quite what it used to be.
I'll agree with that one.
Now, hold on. You had cited some statistic about graduation rates and mental health. Will you hit that again?
Well, I think it's something like the high school experience today with all the high stakes testing that we have and all of the. Basically, it's not. It's basically memorizing things and getting out. It's not learning anything anymore. It's basically stressful cramming all the time. It creates I'm shaking. Anxiety.
You're remembering
anxious.
Your school days, aren't
yes,
you?
Exactly. But it creates I think it's been compared to what in the 40s, mental health facility or...
The experiences through mental health facility in the 1940s?
Is equivalent to today's high school.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll share one thing with you, and I don't know how this feeds into what you're getting at, but when I graduated high school, the number of people in my graduating class was 1,000 people, and I'm going to go out, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm going to go out on a limb, because of course, over the years you're there, you pretty much know most everybody, even if only casually.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to guess perhaps 100 people didn't graduate out of 1,000. Okay. Today, when I read the figures of what percentage of students don't graduate, and in my day, there was no slippery standards. Okay, the standards were etched in stone. You met them or you didn't. Okay, And where today, you know, No Child Left Behind and all this thing, which is completely different from the dynamics of my day. But we had, you know, probably less than 10% didn't graduate. And today I read in some communities the statistics are 60, 65% of students that begin high school don't graduate.
Ridiculous to me. I mean, we're getting off of our initial topic, but I want to kick into it because, like, I've got three daughters in high school. Well, one just graduated. So until a month or so ago, I had three daughters all in high school. And they're talking to me every summer about the classes that they're taking in the fall, and it's ridiculous to me. It's like a number of these classes that they're taking, if you are actually going to use that class, let's take calculus. If you're going to use that class, you've got to, if you're going to use calculus in your profession, you're going to need a college degree to use it, and you're going to have to take it again in college. So it's a waste of time to have it in high school. It is a waste of time.
They should have, like, intro to calculus.
Something like that. I think they call that trigonometry.
All right. So the mental health aspect. Do I hear you hear what you're saying? Is that I should ask, how much of a factor do you think that plays into not so much ordinary crime with guns? You know, some guy goes and robs a liquor store. I don't think mental health is really the issue there. But in these
that goes back to the living wage thing.
But it kind of sets the criteria for what's the norm.
Okay.
I think everybody goes to school. Everybody has a stressful environment. Everybody has a stressful work environment where maybe they aren't making a livable wage, or most people, I would say. And therefore, as the years go on, too, the harder it becomes to live, which statistically it is becoming harder to live in America.
That's very true.
I think you're going to see the norm become what the news is showing you, even though crime rates are going down. Like I said, most Americans believe that it's going up because of what's being...
It's always in their face on the news?
Exactly. Okay. But that attributes to the mental health aspect of it. It creates kind of an environment where you're already kind of anticipating it to happen, and maybe so that's the norm, and maybe if you weren't so mentally stable, you're more likely now to go shoot people.
It's what people call what people often call the new norm.
Yes.
Okay. You know, it seems to me that the more that we target information that's out there, the more we have stuff happen, and the more that it gets reported. Mm-hmm. If we talk about people losing it and using a gun, people are going to think, well, that's happening more and more. Maybe if I'm unstable, I might consider going in that direction as well. It's almost copycat. And we've talked about how statistics show that gun violence is actually down. And the fact of the matter is when it's in our face constantly, we hear more and more about it. Not necessarily that it's happening more, but it seems that it is. And then others might actually be drawn into that. And honest to God, I think there's an underlying reason for that.
How about this is one of the things I think is a big factor in this. People who feel like they're no one, they're invisible. They know if they grab a firearm and they go shoot up as many people as they can, suddenly, their perception, suddenly they're someone because everyone in America knows their name now.
And I don't feed into that, which is why I don't repeat the guy's name that you keep repeating in Orlando.
And we'll be back right after these messages.
Don't worry about that. It's okay. Welcome back. Segment 4. This is where we would normally look into your emails. DaveandBillShow@gmail.com. Not .net, .org, .info, .vegas, or any of that other. .com. That's where you can send us your emails. We got a couple from last week, but guess what? We're not getting to
them
this
week.
We'll look at them next week.
How come we don't have .tv?
We could.
Something to think about.
All right. Well, I'm paying for the .info. If you want to pony up the dues for the .tv, okay, we can double it up. Then you can also go and you can check out totallyunprepared.info and look at all of our shows, our backup. Sorry, it's a little bit lower this week. Sorry, Dave. I didn't want to go across your navel there. Totallyunprepared.info, you can find our videos, links to our YouTube page, and, of course, if you prefer just to listen to us rather than stare at our human handsome faces, then you can do that as well. So, with all that being said,
I should have brought my sunglasses today.
I am pimping Arms Corps and Rock Island Armory.
I see that.
Buddies of mine, they make great products. And as a matter of fact, one of the lead gunsmiths there, he's actually a personal friend of mine. He got me this shirt, which is their team shirt. And I like to rock it.
You gonna go shoot for them?
No, I don't do competitive shooting. You know me, I'm defensive all the way.
Me too. Yeah,
I don't like to run into a gunfight. No. I'd rather wait for them to come to me and get shot.
Absolutely.
They get shot. Yeah, so anyhow, with that being said, we're talking about Second Amendment. We're talking about gun control. We're talking about the less narratives. And somebody who generally identifies from more of a liberal standpoint saying that that narrative is wrong. There's just not much to it. So now what we want to get into is what are the ideas to the solutions to gun violence in America. Now, of course, the left says regulate and squash it, and if nothing else, I mean, our dream would be to take all guns away from all of the people to where only the government has guns. And we know where that goes. I mean, the last century alone, depending on where you look, between 100 million and 240 million innocent citizens were murdered by their government during the 20th century after gun control was introduced. Now, that's a major, even if you take the small number of 100 million, that's a million people a year, as opposed to 2.4 million a year for an entire century. So, with that being said, America seems to have a gun violence issue, if you listen to the news and to the left. What do you think any sort of solutions might be?
Well, I think, basically, the right fears over-regulation, and the left fears under-regulation, but both, basically, I guess the common denominator is fear, which you can blame media or blame whoever, but fear of basically it falling into the wrong hands of people who shouldn't have guns, maybe who are mentally unstable. So I thought the most exceptional solution would be like a psych evaluation, just to evaluate you and see where you are mentally and make sure that, yeah, you're a person that's fit to have a weapon. But then I actually looked at the statistics of mass shootings and mass shooters, and I think it's something like 15% of mass shooters had any kind of prior reports of them being mentally unstable.
Where 85% did not.
Yes. And granted, that's whether or not it was actually reported by anybody prior. Adding a psych evaluation to the process of getting a weapon might actually help that a little bit, because it might actually bring it into the air. But again, it's about whose criteria does that fall under.
Yeah. And then there's the practicality of how to. Clearly, any sort of a psyche eval that's worth anything, minimum, you're talking about, for instance, 6 to 8 hours, because you're not going to figure out anything in a 15-minute interview. I mean, the person who you can figure out something in 15 minutes is pretty out there to begin with and probably already has a track record, right, an established track record of being out of their minds. So you're a meaningful psyche eval, you're talking about 6 to 8 hours. And the number of people, remember we talked about, you know, something more than a million guns are being sold a year. Now, that doesn't mean a million buyers, but nevertheless. And especially if you wanted to psych eval, not just the buyers, but the people that own guns already. I actually did the numbers about 2.5 years ago. I don't remember exactly. But basically, based on the number of psychologists or psychiatrists we have in America, it would take, in order to do a psych eval with the available professional people in this country on everybody who owns a gun or will buy a gun, anticipated to buy a gun, be like 192 years. Okay, of psych evals. So on a practical, you know, how do you get from here to there, leaving aside whether it's wise or not, how do you get that done?
And you see, my issue with it is then you leave it in the hands of the government to decide what is mentally stable and what is not when it for the purposes of gun control. And they're in full control of defining all of that. So if they want to change their narrative, which they do all the time, they just change their criteria. So we can't trust that in the hands of the
and
government.
And the other problem is the mental health care professionals, it has been shown by polling that they are tremendously anti-gun, like 80-something percent anti-gun. So the very people who are going to be sitting across from you judging whether you are already, they already have a predisposed bias against firearms and against firearms owners.
What's your solution, Dave?
Here's my solution. Since mankind has existed, man has been killing man. Whether it was with a stone, a brick, a rock, explosives, gasoline, one of the worst mass killings in this country, a guy padlocked the door of a nightclub, threw some gasoline in and lit and threw a match in there, and one of the worst mass murders in American history had nothing to do with guns or rocks or sticks or knives or swords.
I think Great White was playing that night. One of my favorite bands.
Anyway, so the point is, people kill, and they're going to use whatever they have at hand to kill. And I don't believe, and I think this is something, I'm not speaking of you, but some people on the left believe that somehow magically the government can stop that.
Mm-hmm. They didn't stop the guy in Orlando with all the information they had.
Right.
And so I mean, there's proof right there.
And who was responsible for Wounded Knee? The government.
The government.
Okay. One of the worst slaughters of innocent life in the history of the United States. Greatest slaughter of innocent life on this continent at one single incident perpetrated by the United States government. Yep. So people who imagine that the government has some magical thing where we're going to be able to stop violence, I think, sorry, if you think that way, you're an idiot. Okay? And so my answer is what you and I have talked about here on the show, that Americans need to, recognizing that that's the truth, Americans need to accept responsibility for their own personal safety and quit looking for somebody out there to do it for them, even if the word is government. And they need to get the proper mindset. They need to get the proper training. They need to have this with them. And if somebody threatens their life or perhaps even the life of another innocent, they need to be prepared as a good citizen to intervene and at minimum stop the aggressive action, and at maximum ensure that the violent felon will be violent no more. Imagine if every time somebody in America attempted to be violent, and I'll exclude in the home for the sake of this, outside the home, anyone who committed an act of violence, serious act of violence, not slapping somebody in the face, a serious act of violence, a law-abiding good guy, press, okay? How much violence would we have in society after a couple of years, right? The answer would be, right? So, and of course, that also illustrates that not all violence is evil. If you're protecting the innocent, mm-hmm. that's not evil. So my solution is personal responsibility for your own safety, and perhaps, if you're minded like Bill and I are, the protection and safety of other innocents as well as yourself.
All right, so I'm gonna start a little bit different with my solution to this whole thing. So, Chase, do you consider yourself a responsible adult?
Yeah.
You got a good head on your shoulders and you can handle yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Do other people consider you?
Yeah. Do others consider you a responsible adult?
Okay.
Good. So
her dad does.
My idea is it starts with responsible adults, and keep in mind responsible. Okay. And I don't want the government to define responsible. I want us to be able to define responsible amongst our collective. Are you responsible? If in fact that's the case, What? My solution is, if you're a responsible adult, it should be incumbent upon you to please consider going out and learning to properly learn how to shoot a gun. Have you ever shot a gun before?
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten proper training, or have you just gone out with friends, family, whatever?
From my boyfriend.
Okay. So
not
he's not necessarily
training,
a professional firearms instructor, mm-hmm. which is the way most people learn how to shoot. You know, a boyfriend, their dad, their uncle,
yeah.
somebody down the street, a neighbor, a roommate. That's the way people learn to drive, but they're not professional driving instructors.
Mm-hmm.
There's a major difference. Same thing with shooting. So if you're a responsible adult, go out and learn from professionals on defensive nature of shooting. And that's not just owning a gun no more makes you qualified to defend yourself or others as owning a piano just somehow magically makes you a musician. So don't just be a responsible adult and buy a gun. Learn how to properly use it. And learn how to properly use it, maybe then go out and buy a gun because you have a better knowledge. Like, don't go buy a car and learn how to drive it. Learn how to drive, find a car that fits for you. So my solution is responsible adults learn, they get trained, they get the right mindset, they have a gun, and they carry. We also have to do away with gun-free zones. Because gun-free zones are where everybody's dying in mass shootings. If it's not a gun-free zone, a mass shooting doesn't happen.
Only
every time there's a mass shooting, it's because it's in a gun-free zone. And why? Because it's a gun-free zone.
Only 8% of all mass shootings have been in a place where citizens can carry guns. Only 8%.
Which means 92% are in gun-free zones. We need to get rid of those.
Pretty clear the answer there.
Yeah, absolutely clear. So if it's a gun-free zone, it's got to be a place where you can't just sneak one in. This nightclub in Orlando was a gun-free zone.
Yep.
But the guy got a gun in there. How gun-free was it? So it's going to truly be gun-free. Let's say it's a courthouse or something like that, where they really want the courtroom, rather, to be gun-free. Well, you better damn well make sure it's gun-free. Yeah. Otherwise, get rid of the idea of gun-free zones. And from there, like you were alluding to, or actually saying, is that if the instant somebody brings out a gun and they start causing mass chaos and violence, then you respond with controlled violence, violence of action, yep. and you put them down. And that's going to discourage a lot. Once you get yes. hundreds of people dying a year from this kind of crap, and we report on that in the major media, then people are going to be discouraged from carrying on because they know they ain't going to make it. It's a suicide mission.
And you and I used to work for an extremely large firearm school. And how many times did we have people who would come out, I've been shooting for 15, 20, 30 years, and by the end of day four, holy shit, I didn't know that I didn't know all that
yeah,
stuff.
And they were total bag of cats the entire yeah, time they were right. there, and oftentimes some of the toughest students.
Yeah. And we'll be back. We'll see you next week.
Thanks,
Thank you, Chase. Yeah. Bye-bye.